The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners. Let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I love this chapter. Love it, love it, love it. Love it, love everything about it. Love all of it. Love the writing. And you would think that this would be a chapter I wouldn't like.
I don't think that at all. Why would you think that we would think?
So much exposition. All the exposition there is on the planet belongs in this chapter.
But it's natural.
It is natural. And that's what I was going to get into. The way that this chapter is written, it is expository. You know, there has to come a time when one must exposit, right?
Yes.
It has to happen. And if you're going to do it this way.
Do it now. Do it in chapter 17, Cat, Rat, and Dog. Then Lupin spoke in an odd voice, a voice that shook with some suppressed emotion. Where is he, Sirius? Harry looked quickly at Lupin. He didn't understand what Lupin meant. Who was Lupin talking about? He turned to look at Black again. Black's face was quite expressionless. For a few seconds, he didn't move at all, and then very slowly he raised his empty hand and pointed straight at Ron. Mystified, Harry glanced around at Ron, who looked bewildered. But then, Lupin muttered, staring at Black so intently, it seemed as if he was trying to read his mind. Why hasn't he shown himself before now? Unless, Lupin's eyes suddenly widened as though he was seeing something beyond Black, something more the rest of them could see. Unless he was the one, unless you switched without telling me. Very slowly, his sunken gaze, never leaving Lupin's face, Black nodded.
So great.
Oh, fantastic.
And it's great. The way that the author writes this whole chapter, especially with the interaction between Professor Lupin and Sirius Black, all of that can be taken one way or the other, you know, and even when Sirius is talking to Harry and he's trying to explain things, he's like, you can take that one way or you can take it the other.
Yes.
And that is why this chapter is written so very well. I mean, it's being cagey on purpose. But when you consider the circumstances under which they're all meeting and how fast everything is happening, not everything is going to be explained perfectly. No one's going to sit there and take the time to explain every little detail, what they mean.
They're not going to have like the evil, you know, monologue synopsis.
Or even the... everything is okay. It's fine. Don't worry, synopsis. Someone's just going to come what says right to their brain, and it may not be the most descriptive or accurate thing to say.
But you have this foiled with the Gilderoy Lockhart exposition, you know, when he's like, oh, I'm going to wipe all of your brains, and I lied the entire time.
that is the evil monologue.
That is very different. You know what's so funny? Our little lad tonight, as he was brushing his teeth, he said, Mom, look at my teeth. How do they look? And I said, they look great, buddy. He said, do they look like Professor Lockhart's?
Oh!
Because he used our Arm & Hammer whitening toothpaste, and he remembers that Gilderoy Lockhart has sparkling white teeth. He wants his teeth to be as white as Gilderoy Lockhart's.
Oh, hold on. I got to hit the button. Oh, my God. It disappeared on me.
Sorry.
Oh, here it is.
Nerd! Yes,
we are raising them well. Raising them well.
A couple of things we have to mention here first.
Okay.
Let's see. Caitlin says, this was the first time here on Facebook. She says, this was the first time I finished this chapter and read ahead. LOL. Woo-hoo! Caitlin, I don't blame you. You cannot read this chapter and go, okay, all done.
What does any of this mean? Exactly. Well, we're going to delve into it. But before we do, we want to take this moment to thank our friends at jointhenerdclan.com. And if you are not yet a member there, I'm going to tell you, right now, friend, when you can pause this podcast, or if you're joining us live, you need to make a little note to yourself. Alexa, remind me in 5 minutes to join the Nerd Clan.
Wow, that was
Siri. You too.
That was taken over someone's Alexa.
I did. I just went there. I just went there, guys. Here's the scoop. Jointhenerdclan.com is the one-stop shop where you can support us. But we had this goal of reaching 800 members there, and you've hit it. And to reward you, we're going to be doing three fun things. First and foremost, I'm going to be doing a Minute with Mary makeover on Blake. It's going to be great. It's going to be live, and it's going to be super fun.
Only for the Nerd Clan members.
Only for those of you at jointhenerdclan.com. It's going to be exclusive video, live video. You can participate. You could tell me. Ooh, you can give me suggestions on things to do. Then the second thing we're going to do is we're going to have a live cast watch of either a TV show or a movie of your choice, where we get to, you know, be in the chats together.
Yes.
And then the last thing that we're going to do is we're going to have a live Zoom just for members at jointhenerdclan.com. Hang out, chat, talk about all sorts of things. But what's great is you're actually going to be able to have your voice and your video up on the screen, and we get to see each other and hear each other's voices. So if you want to be a part of this, these perks are coming probably within the next week or two. I'm going to tell you, join right now. It's literally like as little as $2 a month.
You don't want to miss
join
out
on this. JointheNerdClan.com. For now, we're going to get into the show. But before I do, Mo Whitwin says, can you do a Hufflepuff eyeshadow for Blake? Maybe. Maybe.
I'm not in control of what's happening to me.
Let's get into the show.
Oh, hold on, wait.
What?
Gloria says that her Alexa just went off because
of you.
You're
welcome, Gloria. Gloria's already a member at Join the Nerd Clan. She doesn't need the reminder.
Let's do it.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
So, here we are, guys. As I said, Chapter 17, Cat, Rat, and Dog. Those of you joining us live, you were telling us if you got to change into an animal, what animal that would be. And I've done some research. Before we delve actually into this chapter, I want to talk about more about what it takes to become an animagus.
Okay, what do you got?
Okay, to become one, you need to have a single leaf from a mandrake, which you know are a pain in the butt to have to raise.
Yeah, man, you got to, you know.
It takes a long time to raise those little suckers.
Right? It could kill you.
So you have to take a single leaf from a mandrake and keep it in your mouth for 1 month from full moon till full moon. If at any point the leaf is swallowed or removed from the mouth, the process must be started again.
Nope.
Okay? James Potter.
Already out.
Sirius Black and Peter Pettigrew, Minerva McGonagall, Rita Skeeter all did this. They all kept a little itty bitty leaf in their mouth for a month. Not swallowing, not spitting it out. The leaf is removed at the full moon and placed in a crystal vial that receives the pure moon rays. And if it was cloudy on that day, oh well, gotta start over. Together with one of the wizard's hairs, a silver teaspoon of dew collected from a place untouched by sunlight and human feet for 7 days. The crystals of death, head, hawk, whatever this, okay. Then this is put in a quiet, dark place, and it must not be disturbed, touched by sunlight, or even looked until the next electrical storm. Okay, so it's not even like a moon. You got to wait until lightning. Okay?
It'll be forever.
Seriously, it's crazy. And then you have to do this spell thing that happens. You have to say Amato, Animo, Animato, Animagus. And you need to do this whole thing. Okay? You got to touch your chest. And then you...
Are we going to play Simon Says too?
You then have to take the crystal vial. And you have to drink it. And you're going to be in wicked pain, okay? You're going to have fiery pain and an intense double heartbeat.
No! God, please, no!
Then
no!
The transformation is painful. It's frightening.
No!
You gotta not panic, man. You got to just, like, take a deep breath and let it happen.
Got to breathe through it.
The animagus can change back into their human form by visualizing themselves in their minds. Learning to transform takes lots of practice, but it gets easier and faster with time. It's really long, obviously, and you have to be exceptionally talented at transfiguration. So it's not like you were born an animagus.
Yeah. In Amagus.
Oh, see, I like, whatever. The problem is that I read this series before watching the movies or listening to the audiobooks, and I just make up the words how I want to read it in my head. Something that has bothered me is that we didn't have an Animagus in the kids' years that we're here. You know what I mean? It's like adults that are all the Animagus.
Animagi.
See, that's what I'm talking about. The closest things that we get, Draco Malfoy stays ferret form and can like walk around. He's like mentally with it. So he might have had some transfiguration capabilities. And Victor Krum half transforms for the Goblet of Fire. Half transforms. So they have potential. They've got potential, but you need to be straight up super, super good. So once again, it goes to show you, it's been mentioned before, how incredibly smart James and Sirius were as wizards, that they were able to do this. And how determined. And then Peter Pettigrew, who we just kind of push off as like, whatever, had to go through this process too.
No, Peter Pettigrew is legit.
And they did this so that they could hang out with Lupin.
Yeah, right.
So nice.
That's
do crazy stuff.
That's wicked nice.
You change into a form a lot like your body and a lot like your personality, which is pretty dang cool.
All right, so what's your Animagus then?
See, I don't really know. I'll get back to you on that. My personality. I'll get back to you on that. Do you know what you would be?
Yeah.
It is the same form as your Patronus.
Oh, it is?
So that makes me think my Patronus is wrong.
Well, what's your Patronus?
Well, in my made-up mind,
yeah,
my Patronus is a turtle just because I like turtles. But
you're not a turtle.
I'm not a turtle.
You're nowhere near a turtle.
No.
You're the rat. You're the hare, bit bopping around, probably taking naps.
Probably. I'll have to check. You know, I did not like what Pottermore gave me as my Patronus, so I've like ripped it out of my head.
Joy says Alexa just reminded me to join the nerd clan.
You're welcome.
Hey, Gloria too. Gloria, is that Gloria from Methuen?
That's Gloria from Rhode Island.
Oh, that's Gloria from Rhode Island. Okay. Yeah. All right. Sorry.
Yep. I got you. So I just thought it was interesting, as I've always kind of wondered, like, is it something that, you know, what has bothered me has been no one younger has really been.
Yeah, it's too hard. All these kids today, they don't want to do the hard work. They don't want to do no hard work. They just want to go play their PS5s. Damn kids.
The Gen X's, the Zennials, they just weren't into it.
They weren't even, no, get out of here. No way, dude. I'm going to sit there. I'll play.
That's what Potter is.
Where's my Super Nintendo? Yeah, you eat that leaf.
He's a Zennial like us.
Keep it in your mouth for a whole month.
Gross.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Like, think about gum. Don't you keep gum in your mouth too much? You gotta brush your teeth, right? Yeah, and you can't take it out. So you have to move it to the other side. Haven't you like ever kept something in your mouth that was food or candy and you had to like stick it in between your gums? Gross.
That's gross, man. Oh, I'm out.
Minerva McGonagall did it.
See, I could see her doing it.
Rita Skeeter did it.
I could see her doing it too.
Right?
Somebody here said, who was it? It was actually Lily said on YouTube, I'm surprised Snape is not an Animagus. He's very deliberate and careful and knows all about potions.
I think because he can do Occlumency.
Occlumency.
Yeah.
Yes.
He can do Occlumency. That he's like, I've got enough.
Oh, wait, no. Legilimens.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Always mess it up, right? Yeah. Always.
Yes.
Yeah, I think he's like, I don't need to be an animal. Maybe he wanted to, but he knew.
If he did, like he'd be.
It was like a Gryffindor thing to do.
Yeah, like, you know, I'm following these guys. I don't want to follow them. I could see Snape being like, whatever the cool kids are doing, I'm doing the opposite. Give me all the potions.
Yeah, maybe they really liked Transfiguration class, and he was like, whatever, that's for Gryffindors.
You freaking nerds.
Even though Rita Skeeter did it. So I just wanted to share that fun fact, as this is when, you know, we get to see Sirius transform from the dog. But I didn't even get to give my chapter recap. I was just so excited about this knowledge and the commitment that had to be done.
Yes. All right. So why don't you go ahead and give the chapter recap.
We heard the swish of the axe, and then we start this new chapter. Harry, Ron, and Hermione, they're about to go back to the castle, and they see Crookshanks, who chases Scabbers. Scabbers is all like running all over Ron. Crazy things happen. A big black dog, the Grim, comes and gets Ron, breaks Ron's leg.
Oh, not great, Bob.
Breaks Ron's leg.
No.
Oh, my God. And then they go into the Whomping Willow. Harry
not
and
great, Bob.
Hermione were like, how do we get in here? Crookshanks is like, pushing the easy button from Staples. Gotcha, boo. They go inside. It's actually the Shrieking Shack. Hermione, help. Lupin comes in, and they're like, oh, thank God. And he's like, serious? Are you serious? And Sirius is like, sure, I am serious.
Wicked
and
serious.
And
guy.
Then they just like seriously hugged. And Harry's like, what is going on?
Seriously, what is up here?
And Ron's like, you're going to have to kill us all. Ouch. My leg hurts.
My leg is seriously broken.
And Hermione, I knew you were a werewolf all along.
You seriously suck. I'm just going to keep putting the word serious in this as much as I can.
I think the word serious is seriously in this book a million times because of that.
Probably.
And guess what? That's not a rat. That's Peter Pettigrew. Boom. Done.
Yeah. Absolutely. I love this chapter, though.
I know.
I love this chapter because, well, I mean, I don't want to get too far into the chapter already, but just the way that Harry freaks out, just loses his brain.
Good for him. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
He literally, like, they just went to Hagrid's. Because you need to remember, granted, we read this one chapter a week. You need to remember, Buckbeak in their minds was just wrongly slaughtered. And they hear Hagrid howling. Harry is ready to get himself in trouble. He's ready to like rip out from underneath the invisibility cloak. Mm-hmm. Harry and Hermione have to stop him. All he wants to do is go take care of Hagrid, go do something to comfort him from this injustice. Yep. And then this happens right away. Like, this happens. Harry's had it. You know those days when it's like, it's one thing after another. You keep your cool. You keep your cool. And nope. You come home and your partner, like, doesn't put the dishes in the dishwasher the right way for the millionth time. And the cups are right side up, which means they just collected all the dirty dishwasher water. And you're like, I can't take it anymore. That's what happened to Harry.
Yeah, I kind of know that.
I know.
You know, when your partner takes cans of soda and puts it in the sink and then blames it on the kids.
No, that actually was the kids. Mm-hmm. I will gladly say when it's me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so good for Harry. This is just the beginning of cranky Harry. Okay, emo Harry has entered the party.
Yes.
And I'm here for it.
Oh, so much emo.
The teenager Harry. I've been wronged and I am sick of it.
But let's just talk about first. We'll get there in a little bit. You know, we'll get there in a little bit. What are you doing to me?
Oh, you know, I just got a broken mic.
You know, I have to do this mid-recording.
It's okay. I'll just, you know.
There. Okay?
Okay.
Better. All right. Sorry for everyone listening on the podcast app. I'm sorry. I want to talk about the efficiency in this chapter, especially with all of the sights that the author has brought up and then now she's paid off in this chapter,
mm-hmm.
Particularly the Shrieking Shack.
So good.
The Shrieking Shack was introduced a number of chapters ago when you know, Harry and Ron are tooling on Draco and Harry's in the mud and the whole thing. And that's when it gets introduced. And you're thinking, okay, the Shrieking
Shack. They
talk
about it even before then when they're talking about what they're going to do in their Hogsmeade trip.
Right.
It's just kind of sprinkled in. It's the most haunted place. And
yes. But she finally pays that off, mm-hmm. in this one. And not so much of a payoff as much as it is... a landmarker is the use of the Whomping Willow, because that was introduced in the last book.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it gives you an idea like, okay, there's this tree that moves and prevents you from going near it and whatever. And you're like, oh, okay, that's cool. And then the Whomping Willow comes back and destroys the Harry's broom.
Yep.
And you're like, okay, well, yeah, that makes sense. And here it comes yet again, the Whomping Willow actually having some significance. It's not necessarily that it's like the Whomping Willow is absolutely unique, that it has to be the Whomping Willow. It could have been another landmark on the grounds. But the fact of the matter is that it is the Whomping Willow. It is protecting itself. It does prevent you from getting near it. It does show that you can stop it as long as you know where to touch it. And all of these things are showing you that there is a bigger history in this chapter and in this school than what these kids already know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much more textured and layered history than what you thought you were getting originally. It's not just this grumpy tree. There's an actual purpose to it. And I find that fantastic. The way that the author brings these things into these books and uses them to her benefit in the narrative, there's a lot of good narrative efficiency in this.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. I mean, you're getting there. And when you're looking at the size of the book, you know, you've been thinking, like, what's going on? Where is the payoff? Where is the Grimm? What's going on with Crookshanks? What's going on with all this stuff? And you just get one thing after another,
yeah,
really starting to pull it all together. And it just continues. I got to tell you, for those of you who have not read this before, you are in for a ride in this short amount of book that we have left. It, yes, is just so good.
This is when it doesn't stop.
Yeah. And this is why Prisoner of Azkaban is a lot of people's favorite book. It really keeps on rolling from here. And yeah, you just get all this payoff from all these little things that were sprinkled in. So, of course, we get into, as I said, Ron is just pulled away. We've got the Grimm pulling Ron into the Whomping Willow, and Harry's happy for a moment in his mind because he's not crazy.
Right.
Oh, other people see this big black dog. This big black dog that I've been seeing forever. It's real. And I love how he gets to tell Hermione, where she's like, how did Crookshanks know how to push the easy button? Oh, they're friends.
Yeah.
I've seen them hang out.
They know.
You know, like, Harry has had to keep some of these things in his mind all along, because remember, it was just last year he found out not everybody can talk to snakes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Harry has this little thing where he's like, if I can do weird things with animals or I can see things about other animals, I still may want to keep it to myself a, mm-hmm, little bit. You know, not everybody's seeing this. So they get inside the Whomping Willow tunnel, which is marked on the Marauder's map. I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah. It shows you that these guys were using it often and, mm-hmm, they knew about it. That is very interesting. And then all they could see now is one of Ron's legs, which he had hooked around a root in an effort to stop the dog pulling him further underground. Oh, man. And then Ron's leg had broken. And the next second, his foot
had vanished
from sight.
You haven't had a broken leg or arm. You've had broken wrist, right?
Wrist / forearm.
Did it just?
Yeah. It would happen during baseball. My dad, God love him, made me finish out the inning with a broken wrist on my catching hand. I played first base.
So you could still use it?
Oh no, I could not use it. Oh. I just forced myself to use it. Luckily, the play, like the inning ended without me having to catch a ball. But I had to like use both of my hands.
Oh my gosh.
To close my glove.
Listeners who've had a broken leg, you know. When it's like bent in that weird position.
Yeah, not great, Bob.
And to know how brave, good job. It mentioned it multiple times. You know, Ron, I love Book Ron. And Book Ron's been pretty upstanding these past couple of chapters, you know, trying to do the right thing for Buckbeak.
Making tea and doing all the stuff.
Yeah, and here he is. He's got straight up broken leg. He's trying to take care of his friends. He stands up multiple times saying, you're going to have to go through us first. You're going to have to kill us first.
Right. And then not only that, people are telling him in this chapter that his rat is a person.
Yeah.
It's not just a rat, bro. It's a person. Like,
yep.
And he's just got his leg broken. Getting eaten by a dog, like going through the Whomping Willow.
He needs a care package.
He needs, he needs like a big thing of Toblerone or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. He needs a lot of love right now.
Oh, you know, goodness,
Rachel
gracious.
Here says, yeah, I'd say that this book is the thing that gets us to the thing, as Blake says.
Love it.
Marvin, would you agree with
yes.
that?
Yes.
I think so. I think this is when, you know, we've talked about this, I think, a little bit in chapters past, but certainly this book is when things really turn. I think a lot of people make the argument that it was the Goblet of Fire where things turn, especially because of the ending.
Okay.
And that, I think, makes sense. But because this book is so deeply invested in the characters, meaning the history of Harry and his ultimate relationship with Sirius and how those things interact. Mm-hmm. I think that this is when the book, the series makes a turn. It's definitely the thing that gets us to the thing.
You know, it's interesting. We get to this part where Black says, "There'll only be one murder here tonight," said Black, and his grin widened. "Why is that?" Harry spat, trying to wrench himself free of Ron and Hermione. So here we've got boiling Harry. You know, as I said, he's coming straight from the axe of Buckbeak being murdered, hearing Hagrid, who is the closest that Harry really has to a caring parental figure, you know. And yeah, we may not necessarily see Hagrid as a parental figure, maybe, but like a big brother kind of him, you know. Honestly, the person that Harry is closest to, aside from Harry, from Ron and Hermione, didn't care last time, didn't mind slaughtering all those muggles to get at Pettigrew. What's the matter? Gone soft in Azkaban? He is poking.
Oh, yeah.
Poking Sirius Black. Hermione even says, "Harry, be quiet. He killed my mom and dad," Harry roared with a huge effort. He broke free of Hermione and Ron's restraint and lunged forward. He had forgotten about magic. He had forgotten that he was short and skinny and 13, whereas Black was a tall, full-grown man. All Harry knew is that he wanted to hurt Black as badly as he could and that he didn't care how much he got hurt in return.
Oh, man. And like I said, this is when he just loses his brain. Mm-hmm. All of it. He can't help. This reminds me of you. Like, this is something that you would do. You would lose your brain. And you'd
I would have had it.
Like that time when somebody was in your apartment and you like kicked the door down.
Someone broke into my apartment, and rather than be like, "Oh no, 911 it was just the last thing of the day. Yeah. It was like I taught, I was doing all this stuff. I worked at the Philharmonic after school. I had to drop some kid off. I finally get home at 9 o'clock to find that my door was busted in. And rather than do the normal thing I did, I kicked the door and I said, "Who the heck is in here?" And I started to walk through my apartment. And luckily, I was on the phone with my mom. And my mom was like, "What do you mean, who the heck is? Where are you?" And I was like, "Someone's in my apartment." My mom smartly said, "Mary, get out of there.
What are you doing?
You're not going to, like, what, kick them out yourself?" So, yeah, thank goodness my mom was my Hermione at that point. Yeah.
And something else that it's written here, too, just before this, I really liked. A mass of filthy, matted hair hung to his elbows. If eyes hadn't been shining out of the deep, dark sockets, he might have been a corpse. Mm. The waxy skin was stretched so tightly over the bones of his face, it looked like a skull. His yellow teeth were bared and grin. It was Sirius Black.
Bum, bum,
the writing here is just spectacular in every way. You get an exact sense in the use of these descriptors. The waxy skin was stretched so tightly it looked like it was a skull. His yellow teeth were bared in a grin, and how that echoes the earlier part where the dog is showing his teeth and it's the same yellow teeth and that bites into Ron and the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Like perfect in every way. I love how descriptive
It's a beautiful, beautiful chapter. It's out of control. And then we get this really cool bit when when Lupin finally comes in. And like you said, it's this whole exposition, but it's done very organically because there's so much chaos in this room. Right. We've got broken-legged Ron. We've got Scabbers running all over the place.
We also got Crookshanks going to take Harry's wand. A freaking cat is taking your wand.
Yes.
What the hell's a cat doing taking your wand? And
he's part Kneasel.
I know, but Harry doesn't know that at that moment.
Nobody,
right?
Really
nobody knows it. And the cat then goes to protect Sirius, latches onto him.
Mm-hmm.
What? Yeah. Again, this is like, you would think that this is the payoff for why Crookshanks has been acting so funky lately. Like, the whole book, everyone's been freaking out. The Sneakoscope has been freaking out around Crookshanks the entire time. And you're like, that's the reason why. Because Crookshanks and Sirius Black are in league together. Yeah. That cat sucks.
How do you feel about Crookshanks not having as big of a deal? Having, like, I mean, you get to this book and then you watch the movie and you're like, oh, a lot of this is different. How do you feel about that? How they just took Crookshanks out? You see Crookshanks.
Yeah,
and that's about it.
I think Crookshanks is a red herring for the sake of being a red herring.
In the book? What do you think about Crookshanks? The thing that I love about Crookshanks is in the movies is when she eats that extendable ear thing. That's like my favorite Crookshanks thing.
I think that's the important... Like, what I'm getting at is...
That's all I care about for Crookshanks.
Crookshanks in the book is a red herring for the sake of being a red herring.
Okay.
And I don't think that he is a vital part to what they're doing.
But he had to give Sirius Black the codes.
Yeah, that's for nerds. They could figure that out.
Okay.
They could figure that out. Like, they could, like...
I also think it's important that
he doesn't even show up in the thing. He doesn't even show up in the room, right?
No. The movie is very different.
So, I would say having Sirius in the movie show up to the room in and of itself, and even in the book, in and of itself, is not all that important.
No, it's just more fear. It's making it more and more real, from him breaking out to getting closer and being spotted near Hogsmeade than actually being in the school. I think it's just that it is closing in. Another major difference between this and the movie is how Lupin finds out about Peter Pettigrew being alive.
Yes. Yep. And here he had the map and saw that Ron and... There were two people that Sirius was dragging into the Whomping Willow, and that's how he knew that he was dealing with Sirius. That's how he knew something was up. And when he saw Sirius on the same map and all that other crap, he knew what was going on. I really like this too. You know, Sirius Black doesn't deny killing Harry's parents.
No.
Here it is. Black was sprawled at the bottom of the wall. His thin chest rose and fell rapidly as he watched Harry walking slowly nearer, his wand pointing straight at Black's heart. "Gonna kill me, Harry," he whispered. Harry stopped right above him, his wand still pointing at Black's chest. Looking down at him, a livid bruise was rising around Black's left eye, and his nose was bleeding. "You killed my parents," said Harry, his voice shaking slightly, but his wand hand quite steady. Black stared up at him out of those sunken eyes. "I don't deny it," he said very quietly. "But if you knew the whole story..." "The whole story?" Harry repeated, a furious pounding in his ears. "You sold them to Voldemort. That's all I need to know." "You've got to listen to me," Black said, and there was a note of urgency in his voice now. "You'll regret it if you don't. You don't understand." "I understand a lot better than you think," said Harry, and his voice shook more than ever. "You never heard her, did you? My mom trying to stop Voldemort killing me. And you did that. You did it." Ugh. Ugh. Dude.
Just Adam. Edgy. Adam.
Edgy,
yes.
Harry, man. Edgy Harry is the best. Harry's got an edge.
And then Hermione gets an edge because Lupin comes on in.
Yes.
And she then loses it. You know, this is such a great change for these kids as the, I don't know, that like hero mindset that you have for adults continues to get shattered. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen it year after year after year with these teachers who just continue to let them down. And Hermione still has hope and still has faith that she can trust an adult in her life. "I trusted you. I covered for you. I've known you were a werewolf this entire year."
Right.
"And you've been working with him? What in the world is going on?"
It goes to show you, too, like, she puts faith in Lupin. All the kids put faith. And when they hear the rustling downstairs, "Help, Sirius Black, help, help, help." And he comes up and he's like buddies with Sirius Black.
He doesn't come because they were screaming. Because he was looking at
for their perspective, they think that he's there to help them. And they're not right, but they're not wrong either, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so
you were talking about Sirius saying, you know, when Harry's like, "You killed them," and he's like, "I won't deny it." How do you feel about that? He says, Harry starts off, "You killed my parents," his voice shaking slightly, but his wand held quite steady. Mind you, what is he going to do? Expelliarmus? What does Harry know how to do at this point? He doesn't know Avada Kedavra.
Take his wand and shove it in his eye. I don't know. It could be anything.
I know. That's why Harry just doesn't even care. He's like, whatever.
And when you like,
spit
and
at you.
This is another time that the author uses that phraseology the pounding in his ears. I remember she used that. I think it was at the beginning of this book or was that the end of Chamber of Secrets? I can't remember. Mm. But the pounding in his ears, that stands out to me. So when you have that, you know. I know you know what that is. I know what it is. That just that you can hear it in your ear, you know. When you get like that, you lose your brain. That's it.
But you know, this is when Black says, I don't deny it, but if you know the whole story. So how do you feel about him saying that?
The way that I interpret that is I think he does blame himself. Like, he's accepting the fact that, yeah, you're probably right. I probably played a role in that. And whether or not that's emotionally sound or logically sound, I think is a whole other argument.
I mean, think about it. Anyone who survives something when loved ones pass, if they were there, or heck, even if they're not there, they're going to have associated guilt. Maybe you're driving a car and someone hits you and it's not your fault, but you survive. You're going to have the guilt because you're going to keep replaying things in your head.
Yeah, what if I did this differently? What if I left 10 minutes later?
So Sirius Black has had this, what if I did things differently?
Yeah,
for 12 years.
Yeah. And he's had to sit there in the Azkaban and own it and think, this is what happened. I played a role. Again, whether or not that role is as significant as he thinks, that's a different story. And that's a whole nother podcast, I think.
Yeah. But he wants to right the wrong that he was, you know, that Peter Pettigrew was the reason that they were killed.
So and the way that I look at it, too, is like you have to understand. You if you're going to regret it if you don't hear it. The way that I interpret this, too, is like, are you going to kill me? Okay, fine. Kill me all you want.
Yeah.
But let me just at least tell you what happened.
It's crazy because what is driving Sirius is revenge. It's not, I need to meet my godson,
right.
And I need to tell him the truth. That is not it. He is here to kill Peter Pettigrew. And that is why he's been here the entire year. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He's not leaving Harry little notes like, let me tell you stories about your dad and I. No, I have been stuck in Azkaban with the Dementors because of this man. But this man is the reason that my best friend, my heart and soul is dead.
Yep.
Oh.
I like this too. Harry stared down at Black and Crookshanks, his grip tightening on the wand. So what if he had to kill the cat too? It was in league with Black. If it was prepared to die,
Harry's not a cat person anymore.
Trying to protect Black, that wasn't Harry's business. If Black wanted to save it, that only proved he cared more for Crookshanks than Harry's parents. Oh, my God. Harry raised his wand. Now was the moment to do it. Now was the moment to avenge his mother and father. He was going to kill Black. He had to kill Black. This was his chance. It wasn't. What this implies, implicit in this, is it's not just a choice he was going to. It's not just he was going to. I want to. It was I have to.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot move forward unless Sirius Black dies by my hand.
Yep.
That is some seriously dark stuff.
Agreed.
I mean, wicked dark down there.
Wicked dark.
Wicked dark. And then we have all, and then it comes to a point where Harry says that there was a voice telling him to do it. Mm. And I love this. I love this with every fiber in my being. You want to know why?
Oh, gosh. Okay, why?
Because whose voice is it? Do you understand what I'm getting at?
I mean, I think it's Voldemort.
That's what I'm saying. Is it Harry's voice? Is it the part of Voldemort that's in Harry that is making him think, I have to do this?
Because once again, he doesn't know how. It'd pretty much be like, okay, Mary, go pitch the World Series. Okay. All right. Gonna go do it. Like, he doesn't know how to kill. This is Harry Potter.
Oh, man. Unbelievable. Is it Voldemort's voice?
That's, is he going to Wingardium Leviosa him? I'm going to get you. Swish and flick. We got a troll once this way. We could get you.
All right, Harry, put me down. put me down, Harry. Yeah. Like, it's fine. Okay.
He'd be like Grandpa Joe from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
I'm flying. Yep. Great stuff. The subtext there, and I don't even know if the author knew.
I love when you say that.
Well, I mean,
no, I know. It's just a fun thing to hear. I don't know if the author knew.
I don't know if the author knew or had the intent that I'm taking it to be. Mm-hmm. But when I read that, I didn't obviously, you know, when you're reading this book and you're flying through it, as we talked about last episode, Mary, mm-hmm. when you're flying through it, you're not paying attention to these little details, these little things that jump out at you when you're going with serious intent and mm-hmm. serious intent, when you're going with legitimate intent and you're combing through every word and you're looking at each one of these meanings. When the author puts in here, a voice was telling him to do it. She doesn't say Harry's voice. She doesn't go into his perspective. She doesn't give us italics indicating thoughts from Harry. It says there was a voice telling him.
Like, if we could have had this in the movie where he's like, I'm going to kill him, and he did that little neck twist.
Oh, Mary. Mary. I'll stay. Oh, that just gave me nerd sweats. Oh, oof. Just got hot in here. Got raised up 10 degrees thinking about that.
All right.
Wow. Wow. Another thing that comes in here too is when they say, get away from me, werewolf. Mm-hmm. I like that too, because that is indicative of a kid who's really pissed and has that inherent bias against werewolves. It shows you how werewolves are. Even them, like,
that's like a Ron thing.
Well, yeah,
it's not a healthy.
That's the pathos in him.
Yeah,
that's the pathos in him. Like, and I'm not saying it's good. It shows you. It's indicative of that inherent bias.
It's a pure wizard problem.
Yes. Oh, and you know, I did want to say one other thing too. Where was the writing here? Oh my goodness gracious! The way when he starts to explain, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's just like when Sirius was explaining to Harry, I can't believe you didn't go tell a teacher. Your father would have done the same thing. That's really important because, again, as a reader, you could take that either way. Mm-hmm. You could take that as him taunting Harry, like provoking him, being like, yeah, one person's going to die today, and I can't believe that you did what you did. Your father would have done the same. Or you can look at it from the truthful perspective, which was kind of a perspective of love, or being thinking about it in terms of the caring nature that James had for Sirius. Like, your father would have done the same.
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe it. Like, you two are the same.
It's crazy.
And that's awesome. But so the way that it's written, it can be both. And that is a masterclass in writing for a chapter that is giving you information, but keeping things in stasis for that final reveal, which is, oh no, by the way, what do you mean? Of course he's a rat.
Oh, no.
He's not, said Lupin quietly. He's a wizard.
Lupin.
You're a wizard, Harry.
Who not only drops this bomb, but is like, oh yeah, I helped write the Marauder's Map.
Yeah, by the way.
Mic drop.
BT dubs.
Yeah.
Again, what we're talking about here.
I've seen that invisibility cloak. I know you have it. Just dropping knowledge.
Yeah, just dropping it. The amount of information here is the amount of information that is exposited is enormous. But again, it's all rooted in emotion and character and in a setting that is unique, in the Shrieking Shack. That Shrieking Shack is the perfect place for this kind of conflict. It is dirty and nasty and the walls are all shabby and the windows are boarded up and there's dirt everywhere. And there's even that writing where you could see where Ron was dragged mm-hmm. and how it was clean and glossy except for the dirt around it. It's grimy. As soon as you start hearing these descriptors, you're right in there.
Yeah.
And this is perfect for that.
Agreed.
Perfect. Love this chapter. I'm in.
Yay.
So Rachel says, and I killed Spocky too. It was Agatha all along.
Nerd!
I can't play that. Never mind. I'm going to play the WandaVision song. Okay. Got anything else?
No.
All right. You ready for a different perspective?
Sure.
All right. Let's do it, shall we?
Holy cricket. You're Harry Potter. I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
Crookshanks.
Crookshanks! Listen, Crookie, can I call you Crookie?
Sure.
Crookie, your voice is a little weird.
I'm a cat.
What do you want out of me?
Hey, you know?
What do you got? Crookie.
Yeah. I like
that. Can you be Shanksy or Crookie? You want Crookie or Shanksy? You gotta have one.
Crookie?
All right, Crookie.
What do you think I am, a rat?
You've been...
I like that this has become an interview. Okay, continue.
The thing about you is... It's become an interview. I like it. The thing about this is you've been a little off. All book, Crookie.
What are you talking about? I'm a cat.
you're running around.
Do you know what cats do all day?
Yeah,
no,
they
don't.
Sleep.
You think.
They poop.
Yeah.
And they eat.
Yeah, but like, do you follow us around all day? No. Just mind your own business.
I got
okay?
my own things to do.
I've got my own friends.
Last time I heard, cats and dogs didn't get along.
Some cats do. My dad just got one shipped up from my dad just got one shipped from like Alabama.
No, you gotta keep talking to the crook.
From Alabama. Okay? Because he found out that this cat likes dogs and he wants a little friend for his dog. So he shipped up a cat.
That is absolutely true, by
Paid
the way.
Paid way too much.
Real
Shipped
life.
Shipped up a little cat.
A
oh
little
my God.
Cat.
Anyway.
Ridiculous.
I can be friends with whoever I want. Leave me alone.
Okay, Crookie. So.
I was going to go in a different direction, but
no,
you
no,
made
go.
This an interview.
No, you got to go.
Continue, okay? I feel like I'm on 60 minutes.
Crookie, why don't you tell me what you're thinking? Just tell me about your experience so far.
Loving life.
You
okay?
loving life? Why are you loving life?
Like, if you. like.
Hold on.
That's what she said.
You're welcome, Blake. It's Crookshanks. He's happy. He's purring. You're welcome, Blake.
I'm sweating.
Good.
All right, keep going. What do you got?
Okay.
You're happy.
I'm so happy. I just lost the guy voice. Okay. I'm so happy. I hate Scabbers. Okay. Scabbers isn't Scabbers. Scabbers is some weird dude.
Uh-huh.
I've known it all along.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love life right now. My best friend, he brings me treats all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He's got this wicked cool hangout. And we like hang out there and listen to music and do crazy stuff. And now Scabbers is caught. The dog's actually a guy, which is even better because it means he can buy me treats. And I got a house to myself.
I'll take the lot.
Done.
Nerd!
And scene.
Oh, good stuff. Good stuff. Ellen says 60 Minutes presents Crookshanks, the misunderstood cat.
There's your shirt.
Oh, that's you know what?
Crookshanks, the misunderstood cat.
I like it. All right, time for some emails, listener questions. You got that, Mary? You ready to do that?
Okay.
Oh, man.
Is it my job?
No. I'm going to do it. I'm like taking a breath because I was laughing so hard. My stomach hurts.
Do you want me to pull them up?
No, I got it. It just made me laugh.
Oh, Miles here.
Oh, man.
We got one from
great.
Spain.
Well, first, we want to say thank you, everybody, for taking the time to write these emails. We got some emails here. And if you're watching us live, you got some questions. I know there was some that happened earlier. But make sure you put a lightning bolt emoji if you're watching live. before your question so that when we look at the comments, we can answer it and we know that it is a question you want us to address. And if you are listening to this on the podcast app, you are not alone. Don't worry about
it. You are not alone.
You can send us an email at maryandblakemedia@gmail.com and we will answer them when we receive them. Always in the heart. All right, here we go. Email and questions. This one comes from Paulina in Barcelona. My question for you is this. What?
No, I'm listening.
Does the Marauders map show people using the time turner? I think theoretically it should, but in that case, both Lupin and Snape should have seen Harry and Hermione both in the Shrieking Shack and at the forest. I know you already think that time travel has a lot of handicaps plot-wise, but still, I would love to know your opinions on this. Marvin, your thoughts?
Yes. I think that Lupin can see it. I think all the teachers are well aware that Hermione is using the time turner for her classes. So I think if Lupin's been looking at it and he sees Hermione, he doesn't think much of it. But I think he was specifically watching the trio leave from the common room, go to Hagrid's hut.
Yeah, and then start walking out.
And saw Peter Pettigrew. Because I don't think he's been looking at it all this. You know, he saw Peter Pettigrew. Like, right. That's what it was. So he just, like, dropped everything.
Yeah.
And took care of business. Right. So I don't think he would have thought much of it because he would have been in on the fact that Hermione's been using the time turner.
Yes.
And I don't think that he had enough wherewithal to be like, oh, there's two Harrys. I think he just saw Peter Pettigrew and went for it.
And this is the thing, again, when you start introducing time travel into your story, there are a kabillion possibilities.
Yeah.
And every question that you have and every answer that you give, It goes back to Lost.
We have to go back, Kate.
Every answer that you give just provokes another question every single time. So time travel is crazy.
It's especially a lot.
It's a lot for your story. You know, we've been rewatching the Marvels, like the Avengers movies.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a time travel aspect in Avengers Endgame. And Captain America deals directly in one of those time travel aspects. And you wonder, okay, how...
It's Harry Potter time travels.
Yeah, it's like, how did this happen? And why did this happen? And were there two Captain Americas? Like, it's a whole thing. So when you start thinking about it in those terms, it's big. All right, the next one comes from Lacey. She says, my question is, could Lucius Malfoy have been appointed headmaster at Hogwarts? And do you think that Umbridge and Filch are brother and sister? Thanks, from Lacey.
I do think that Lucius Malfoy could have been had he chosen a different career in life. Like, had he chosen to be...
Like normal?
Had he been, like, in education.
Yeah.
I bet you... I mean, there are people who live privileged lives who, you know,
who get jobs that they ain't supposed to have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's just call it what it is.
And do I think that Umbridge and Filch are brother and sister? I do not.
No, I don't think so either. I don't even think there's any textual evidence to suggest that they are brother and sister.
I think that Filch makes it up in his mind that maybe she is his sister and that he would like that to have a little family.
You know, well... Or you know, maybe
he writes his letters to her, Lilas. Love you like a sister. Hey there, Dolores. I unclogged all of the toilets just like you asked. Lilas-Filch.
You are such a dork.
Because that's what they would have done in the 90s and 2000s during this time period. Well, it would have been, yeah. That's when Harry would have gone to school, man.
So, yeah, could Lucius Malfoy have been a headmaster?
Lucius Malfoy.
I think so. But when you start propping him up against Dumbledore, I mean, it'd be kind of hot.
No, I mean, well, he wouldn't have gone against Dumbledore, but we're just saying, like, if Umbridge had the ability to be at such a high level because of her influence within the Ministry of Magic, then, yes, one can argue that Lucius Malfoy probably could have as well.
Sure, okay. We got some other questions here. What do we got? Let's see. Elizabeth asks, I don't understand if Crookshanks chose Hermione or just became part of the plot later.
I don't think Crookshanks chose Hermione.
No, Hermione chose Crookshanks, and I think it was just a matter of... He got involved.
I like you. You like me. Let's hang out.
We're buddies. We're here.
Yeah.
We're ready to go.
And then right away, something's up with this rat.
Yeah, I know what's going on with this rat. Hey, mm-hmm. I know. Something's up with you.
I know.
Something's up with you.
I'll take the lot while I'm on the train.
I'll take the
lot. Anything from the trolley? Yes.
I'll take the lot. Give me all the ciggies and beer.
Okay.
Caitlin asks, what can Harry's dad turn into as an animagus? It's a stag. Yes. And that is it. I think that's it. That's all the questions that we got.
Okay.
All right.
Easy breezy beautiful.
Cover girl. All right. All right. Let's close this bad boy out, shall we?
We shall.
Let's do it.
Thank you all so much for tuning into this here episode of the Potterverse. In addition to heading on over to jointhenerdclan.com, another way that you can support Mary and Blake Media Podcast is actually by heading on over to minutewithmary.com.
Oh, yes.
And I wanted to let you all know that I'm not just a U.S.-based beauty company. I'm actually in Canada, Mexico, New Zealand, Australia, the U.K.,
we're all over the place.
Ireland, France, Germany, the Netherlands, Portugal, Spain. Looking at you, Paulina. I'm even there. I'm even where Paulina is. I'm in a bunch of different places. So one of the best things you can do if you're like, Mary, are you in my country? Send us a message. Search the hashtag Minute with Mary and let me know, because I find new friends every day who's a podcast listener who didn't know that I'm actually in a bunch of different countries, and I would love to be your makeup girl in addition to being your podcast girl.
Look at you.
Yeah, it's the truth.
Sarah on Instagram says, world domination.
Hey, Minute with Mary, got you.
All right.
Got you. All right. For now, my name's Mary.
My name's Crookshanks.
Mischief managed.
Yeah, my ciggies and beer.
Please.
The packy.